gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Maximum Film, episode 214. No area code that I never recognize, but it is your host, Ify Wadiway, and of course, I'm in the booth with my friends, so let me introduce you to them. First up, we have Alonzo Duralde, Christmas Daddy himself. Now he's Haunted Daddy. What's good?
Well, Ify, the 214 is the Dallas area code, which you're making me dredge out of my memory because I lived there for quite a while. You know, look, normally my what's good would be to talk about how, like, you know, Netflix dropped all their holiday dates today, including their same-sex romance, which I'm very excited about. But no, what this is, we're kicking off our queer horror month, so I'm going to keep it queer horror. So I want to give a shout out to columnist Sean Abley over at Fangoria, who's been doing a really fun series of columns called Problematic Films, where he's basically been trying to figure out a way to defend certain films that have, you know, people find problematic in one way or another. And rather than do so from his perch as, you know, white film critic, is bringing in people who sort of have the right to say so. So, for example, in talking about Sleepaway Camp, Sean talks to trans performer and writer Calpurnia Adams to talk about Candyman. He brings in gay black comics creator William O'Tyler to talk about I Spit on Your Grave, brings in B.J. Colangelo. So it's a really interesting way to kind of look at movies that maybe some people have been, you know, tempted to, oh, I don't know, cancel, as some people might say. But, you know, with a point of view of the communities involved in those films, kind of saying, you know, maybe we should look at this in another way. So I just wanted to steer people to that. It's all happening over at Fangoria.com.
That's so cool. What a generous plug for someone else, Alonzo. So nice of you.
It's the season of giving, Drea.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that's what I like to hear. Well, you know, speaking of giving, Drea is giving that Midwest flair right now. Queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark, what's good?
I really do it to myself by dredging up my accent, don't I?
Yeah.
I can't help it.
Can't deny it this week.
Oh, I'm going to split that cheesecake. I couldn't have the whole thing.
Oh, no. A whole lemon bar? No, thank you, Marge. What's good with me, I feel guilty, although I'm sure someone could connect this to queer horror in some way, but it is my season, a never-ending season, of constant viewing of things, and I'm going a bit stir crazy. I literally have hours and hours of things to watch every single day, like required, not just, ooh, fun, I'm gonna binge this, because you guys know I love to binge watch. Ladies, did I get a foot peddler? I did.
Oh.
If your follow-up is, what the shit is a foot peddler? It is not someone trying to sell you a foot. It's like bike stationary, just the bike pedal.
Just the pedal part.
You put it on the floor, right? I put it by my couch, and I'm like, all right, well, if I have to sit here for 1,014 hours, I'm going to pedal. And then I still feel a little bit stir-crazy, but more like a hamster with a wheel. Do you know what I mean? So I'm sure, like, filled with it. So yeah.
Are you getting those biker calves yet?
Oh, ooh. Here's hoping. When you see me next, it's going to be like, I'm going to be like, don't look at my face. Look down. Excuse me. My calves are down here, sir. That's what I'm going to give you.
Does it have like hill settings or
it has? No, I mean, it is a pretty cheap operation from online. So I do, you know, if you're looking for this kind of thing, it's not a big investment. It has like a tension, like, oh, but I mean, there's nothing as sophisticated as, oh yes, now I'm on my elf climb.
Or if you get one of those, just a standalone one, you can pair it with your Apple Watch and they have the Apple Fitness Plus, where it's basically their competition for Peloton. And I gotta say, there was a moment in the pandemic I had my air bike and they were talking to me, and you know, they have those real conversations, and I really, like, I felt that I was like, yeah, I need a person who believes in me right now. So
Ify, I love the version of me that you see that owns an Apple Watch. That's cool. Exciting. Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know just in time to get ready for Christmas.
That's right.
Thanks for letting me know.
If it was like, was Siri walking you through this exercise or a real person?
They hire like real like gym folks to do it. And they all have Instagrams. Sharika Holmes, I tagged her. I was like, that was a good workout. And then she posted it and was like, good job, Iffy. I'm like, just like the app, you're talking to me. You're talking to me. So just so you know that. But let's keep this show rolling like you on that bike. next up, we have the director of Shudder's upcoming queer horror documentary, The Quiet Room, as well as co-host of the Austerion podcast, which shout out to Shudder. I had to get a free trial, which I will keep to watch The Quiet Room. Then I'll cancel it. No, I'm just kidding. That. I will keep it. This is Sam Weinman. How you doing? What's good?
Hello, friends and former professor. Alonzo, you used to teach at Chapman, right?
Yes.
Hi.
Oh, shut up. Were you in my class?
Yeah, girl. No. Yeah. I had to wait to drop that one.
That's hilarious. Wow.
Can I change my what's good to this very moment?
Yeah, I know. Me too.
Yeah, you know, that's why I was so quiet. I'm like, I can't give myself away.
Did you learn anything?
Absolutely. I learned, well, it's the evolution of narrative film, so I learned how it evolved. It was fantastic. It was in 2015, and I didn't know anything about film when I got to Chapman. I just pretended like I did. And now here I am with you. So
wow.
I think it worked out okay.
Another success story. Excellent.
There it is. What's good with me, aside from being here with you all today? I've been binging Big Brother season 12 is what I'm going to recommend to you. And no, that's not current. That is from 2010.
I was just going to say, I feel pretty sure they're past 12.
So I've never seen it, but you know, Drag Race All Stars was on Paramount Plus. And when we finished that, I'm like, I still have it for free for like a month. And my boyfriend was like, yeah, why don't you start Big Brother? And he sent me back to the 2000s. And as you know, Austerion is a podcast that like unpacks millennium era horror. So I'm very into, or aughts era horror. And I'm very into the aughts. And so I was watching these old episodes. And like, if you want to go in a time machine to the 2000s, like, don't watch a movie from then. Like, go watch reality TV.
Yes.
That is every cultural attitude, every like inside joke, all the clothes. I'm obsessed. I cannot get enough. And so I guess this is like the opposite of queer horror, because this has like been my escape from my life right now, which is all queer horror, thanks to the doc. This is like my turn my brain off and enjoy the show.
Ooh, that's like the cool thing about watching low budget movies is like they don't have a set dresser. So you're pretty much watching people in a documentary, but saying dialogue.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how reality works. Reality exactly. TV works.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's such a fun. I did a similar thing. You guys, I've definitely mentioned this. I'm obsessed with MTV's The Challenge, which started as the Real World Road Rules Challenge. And that is another great sort of cultural milestone of like the passing of time, because if you're like, oh, I wonder if anyone was actually wearing Ed Hardy, they were, and they were on MTV's The Challenge. Yeah, that's awesome. Wait, can I do a full circle for Sam?
Of course.
You were my what's good a long time ago when you were accepting, you were like asking for commentary or something for your documentary. Like you did a sort of call for whatever, and I did that as my what's good. You guys,
it's so like, cool.
It's like Sam's, you know, it's like he's been here all along.
Exactly.
I've been haunting you.
Good. Clearly. Look at that. Yeah. It's like you've already been on the show before we even been in the show, you know.
If it was good.
Yeah.
Oh, I tried to time it with you.
Yeah. What's good with me is, you know, for all my Spotify users out there, if you are driving places, if you're back out in the workforce, I've been having a few gigs where I leave my house and I finally started using, they have this thing called the Daily Drive, where they make almost like a morning radio show using like the daily for like a chunk of the story in the middle, and then they'll do like the NPR kind of like 15-minute news bump, and in between it, plug in like the music that you like. So it'll be like a playlist of music you listen to while getting news. So I'm like all locked in. Like I knew all about this Facebook, you know, situation, the whistleblower, because they had a like, it must have been purposeful, but like essentially they did an episodic podcast about the dark side of Facebook, and on the like the episode in which they speak to her comes right after her 60 minutes. So it seems like a real like it seems like they timed, like they knew she was gonna
like they had to sit on that one until after the
it was like really well timed. So like by the time she was talking on it, like I was well aware of everything that she was gonna be talking about. But yeah, if you want to stay like locked in the news, and I'm sure if for our right-leaning listeners, I'm sure they'll throw Joe Rogan on there instead of NPR. Like that's what I imagine is the other version of the, like, I'm sure they're like, oh, we have a leftist dork, so we're going to play NPR. But I wonder, like, if you're
so it's
not
another
leftist
way to create an echo chamber on the internet.
Yeah,
is what
exactly.
You're saying. Okay.
You know, exactly. But you also get to listen to Waka Flocka in between it. So
oh, Lord.
That's the difference. That's my favorite part of it, is like it going from NPR to like hard rap. And I'm like, yeah, this is my NPR. But today is the first episode of our month-long feature focusing on queer horror, and we're discussing Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker. And of course, we're going to be playing a sexy and horrific game of Would You Rather. And as always, we'll have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And I'm starting off with a story that Dre said I had to read, which is titled Jerry Seinfeld Sorry for B-Movie Being So Horny. I wonder why Drea had me read this one. During a recent appearance on The Tonight Show, Jerry Seinfeld brought up 2007's animated B-movie in which he starred as an anthropomorphic bee named Barry opposite Renee Zellweger's human character, Vanessa. The central plot revolves around Barry breaking bee's rules about not revealing they can speak when Vanessa saves him from being squashed by her boyfriend, kicking off a romantic love triangle that includes Vanessa striking a pose for Barry. Seinfeld said he wanted to officially apologize for what seems to be a certain uncomfortable, subtle sexual aspect of B-movie, which really was not intentional. After it came out, I realized this is really not appropriate for the children, because the bees seem to have this thing for the girl. We don't really want to pursue that as an idea in the children's entertainment. producer, programmer, podcaster Drea Clark had this to say. This sarcastic aside by a comedian small talking on a late night show about a 14-year-old family film may not actually be news, but it had the word horny in the title, so there was no way I was not going to include it and give us the opportunity to discuss cross-species flirtations in film. Is this important? Do you care?
Obviously, this is important. Obviously. I did seek this out because the fact that this actually like got populated, even you guys know I'm not on social media much. Like I'm in and out. I'm clueless. The fact that this headline got put up as a headline in multiple places, like kept coming. I was like, no, this is ridiculous. But it did remind me, because it is ridiculous. Like if you go and watch B-movie, it's fully, you know, that's the funny thing. They always, it's part of the like, ooh, we're going to put some grown-up stuff in this animated kids movie. Mm-hmm. And almost always it's inappropriately sexual or unnecessarily sexual. And it made me think of things too, but mostly it's like, oh, I've been looking for years for a portal for us to discuss the love scene in Howard the Duck. And this is finally, like, it is barely an off-ramp to it, but it was one. And I had to take it.
Look, if the MCU ever gives us the Howard the Duck reboot that we've been demanding and that they're clearly hinting at by dropping in him into various movies, we'll go back and do an episode about the original Howard the Duck. I'm not against that.
Oh,
but not until we get a new one, though. Let me be very clear about that. Oh. But B-movie like takes this to a new level, because you're right. Most like Shrek certainly opened the door for like very sort of sniggering innuendos in kids' movies that were just like, ew, that's could we not? But usually those are either super double entendre-y that are going to drop fly over a kid's head, or it's going to be a reference point to some very adult piece of media, like when they dress up as the Pulp Fiction guys in, you know, Space Jam or whatever. But this is like the plot of the film, like the love triangle between the bee and the woman and the human woman and the human man is like a major component of the story. I mean, kids are not going to like miss that because it's front and center. It's one of the many things that are wrong with B-movie, but it is one of the things that's wrong with B-movie. And of course, you know, we could always bring up the notion of like, it's fascinating that a guy who thought it was perfectly okay to date a high school girl when he was in his 30s is apologizing for B-movie. But, you know, whatever. You do you, Jerry Seinfeld.
I haven't seen B-movie, but I would like to advocate for horny kids movies. And this is why. I recently saw Aquamarine from 2006.
Oh, yeah.
That is the horniest kids film I have ever seen. And I loved every minute of it. So I can't trash talk B-movie because I haven't seen it. But I will say Emma Roberts, Aquamarine, there's no bad time to plug this movie. Guys, it's great.
Aquamarine is mermaids, right? Like teenage mermaids?
Yeah, there's a mermaid. It's like the Little Mermaid if it was told from Flounder and Sebastian's point of view and they were lesbians.
That's how you pitch a movie.
Emma Roberts has a really great cover of Weezer, Island in the Sun, if you stay for the credits. So just hang in there. It's worth it.
And if you're going to watch B-movie, there is a very funny running joke about Ray Liotta, but that's literally the only thing I even remember from that movie.
Wait, like an actual, like about Ray Liotta?
About Ray Liotta, and then Ray Liotta shows up voicing himself, yes.
Yeah. So that movie has its finger on the pulse about as much as I do.
And about what young audiences want to see, for sure.
Yes. You know what? That's so true. You know what third graders in 2007 loves? Ray Liotta. He tests off the charts. Oh my God.
That's why he hosted the Nick Choice, the Kids Choice Awards.
For sure. He does every year. Oh my God. I would watch that actually. All right. In additional news, so Howard University and Netflix just announced a $5.4 million endowed scholarship to honor actor, director, writer, and producer alumnus Chadwick A. Boseman. Back in September, Howard officially renamed its College of Fine Arts after the Oscar-nominated actor. The Chadwick A. Boseman Memorial Scholarship will provide incoming students in the College of Fine Arts with a four-year scholarship to cover the full cost of university tuition. It will focus on students who exemplify exceptional skills in the arts reminiscent of the Black Panther actor and who demonstrate financial need. The endowment is supported by Boseman's widow, Simone Ledward Boseman, who said, "Many exemplary artists are not afforded the opportunity to pursue higher learning. We hope to support as many students as possible by removing the financial barrier to education. This endowment represents Chad's devotion to the craft, his compassion for others, and his desire to support future storytellers. Is this important? Do you care?"
Yes and yes.
Yeah. No, this is phenomenal.
I don't know what controversy we're supposed to hash out here. This all sounds great.
No, I think it's the rare, everything in this little bit is nice. It is funny that we've been talking about the like looming potential strike with IATSE that's largely about streaming platforms trying to like retain their new media rights and pay them lower rates. And then Netflix is like, well, we do have money. We'll give it in these ways. And so it has that sort of PR thing. But Chadwick Boseman's widow and estate and family, like everyone around him, has really done such wonderful work to like keep his legacy going. And in these things, like you don't just, you know, Howard changing the name of their entire like School of Fine Arts or College of Fine Arts, that's not that comes because someone was pushing buttons. You know what I mean? And I, as a button pusher, as someone who is not afraid to write a formal letter, I appreciate that. Like, I love that even with the sort of PR cynicism I could take of this, it is just so like genial and positive. And we never get those things.
Particularly when you think about how relatively brief his acting career was. I mean, I'm not talking like James Dean three movies, but it's not too far past that. So, I mean, like, he passed away very young, passed away as his career was really taking off. So, I mean, like, he made a huge difference in a handful of films and a relatively short amount of time. The kind of thing that most people's, you know, would be so happy to if they're like 25 year career in film and television had the same kind of impact. You know,
did you bring up James Dean? Cause you're wearing, is that James Dean on your t-shirt?
No, it's not. It's a young filmmaker named Clay Bloodworth. That was a moment where he was having a health crisis and some friends of his made t-shirts with his face on them and sent them to his favorite podcasters. And we all took pictures and posted them on Instagram as a way to show support. He's fine now. So
I'm glad to hear it. He's fine. And some lady over Zoom confused him for James Dean.
Yeah. I mean, that, if anything, that was better than the pic.
He's been called worse, I'm sure. No doubt. In other news, Neon, the distributor, has lined up a most unusual release plan for Thai filmmaker Apichatpong Virasethakun's latest film, Memoria, which won the jury prize at Cannes. Rather than a traditional platform release in multiple theaters simultaneously, the Tilda Swinton starring film will be rolled out with a, quote, deliberate and methodical approach, moving from city to city, theater to theater, week by week, playing in front of only one solitary audience at any given time, according to the distributor. The idea is to frame Memoria as a kind of never-ending moving image art exhibit. The film will only play in theaters and will not become available on DVD, on demand, or streaming platforms. Virasethakun said, for Memoria, the cinema experience is crucial, or maybe the only way. Let's embrace the darkness and dream one at a time. Is this important? Do you care?
I fucking love this idea. I am really? A guy who spends way too much money on shoes just so I can have a type of shoe that not that many people are wearing. I am a type of guy who will pay a fucking 13-year-old to stand in line at Supreme to get a sweater
that
could easily be mass produced, but they choose to only make five so that there's false scarcity. So shit like this gives me a rock hard purchase boner. I want to be the one fool who sat there and did it. And this is way more fulfilling, and I'd say way more cultured and honestly way better than a fucking box logo plastered on a shirt. I like this. Honestly, the only thing which I won't, you know, beef too hard about is like we are still in the panorama, so that's kind of like a whole thing, but I hope more filmmakers do things like this where it's like you had to be there. Oh.
And I think now more than ever things are so accessible, not just films, but even when you're talking, when we're thinking, I was having a conversation today about horror memorabilia and how like you can imagine it and it's out there or it's on Etsy or it's on, there are 10 sites you can get it. There isn't, with everything out of our reach, to me, immediately my brain lit up like, oh, that's so cool. I have to do it. Now I am an avid Black Friday shopper. I'm a 36-year-old man with Beanie Babies. Do you know what I mean? Like I am that guy. So yeah, this is my shit, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I'm torn on this one because on the one hand, like I'm a big fan of Virasethakun and he has worked in the sort of museum installation space before. And the idea of this movie being something akin to that, you know, I get it. It does make it kind of cool and different and interesting. And I have seen stuff like, you know, Christian Markley's The Clock, which you can only see like in museums or galleries, you know, like at very specific times when it goes around. So on the one hand, yes, I understand that it's kind of going into that space as opposed to sort of mainstream film distribution. On the other hand, I can't escape the idea of the democratic nature of cinema. Like it's a thing where, you know, yes, a movie might start on one screen in New York and one screen in L.A. and maybe get its way to a college town near you or a museum for one night. But then eventually it is on physical media and it streams and it becomes something that anybody can access. And, you know, I think one of the things that was most exciting about 2020 was that if you lived somewhere that didn't have an art house and didn't have a museum and didn't have a college and cool art films and foreign films and stuff like that never came to your town, if you had Wi-Fi, you could access all these virtual cinemas and you could see, you know, Bacurau or whatever when people were seeing it in other cities. So I kind of wish they could split the difference here and like, yes, let's make this a solitary installation. It only screens one city at a time, one theater at a time, all that stuff. But like, decide that in 10 years, in 15 years, we will put it out on Blu-ray just for people to have it and for people to access it with ease. So that's kind of where I am.
Like as someone who is like eternally online so much, there are ways to mimic what is going on here in a accessible online way. So, you know, if you still wanted that weird, like we can only do so many, this is an online waiting room so that people, because I think, you know, you
book a time that, when you're going to rent it.
Yeah. Like you did bring up something that totally missed. And every time the cool factor is like, yeah, if you're not in these big cities, like I doubt they're going to the cinephile who's in the middle of nowhere, who doesn't even have an art house theater, and they're just going to miss it. And it's not for not wanting. It could be someone who would have no problem waiting outside 48 hours just to see it. But because of distance and being far away, they just have to miss it. So I'm back to the middle. Alonzo drug me back.
I love making film going an event and something really special. And I really love that. And I do think his films in particular lend themselves to that kind of specialness. But I do agree with the idea of access. And what I'm going to wait till like put in my final vote until I can see their rollout plans, because they also didn't give an end date for this. And if this is the kind of film that will someday end up in McCook, Nebraska, my grandparents' hometown, that has like two or three small ass 80 seat room theater, like that's their multiplex, then I'm going to be really excited, because I also do think that's the kind of thing that could be exciting for this filmmaker, of bringing this and bringing this specialness to really unique places in the country. So, well, we shall see. We shall see.
All right. Well, we got a movie to talk about, so we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking about Butcher Baker, Nightmare Maker.
Storyblocks makes it possible for creators to keep up with the growing demands for modern video content, so you can bring all your stories to life and stop sacrificing your vision due to time, budget, or resources. Storyblocks' unlimited all-access plan gives you unlimited downloads of the more than 1 million assets in their library. You can try out multiple options quickly and find the perfect fit so you can create more and spend less. Restock is their commitment to increased representation in stock media by hiring creators from marginalized communities to create content that is more reflective of the diverse world we live in. Stay on budget while telling the best version of your story with the most affordable subscription plans and tools on the market that scale to meet your needs.
So if you are making something, if it is a short film, and if it's narrative, if it's documentary, if it's something for the interweb, you can make it look better with tools you can get at Storyblocks. The things that I love, there's templates for your lower thirds that will give you title cards in a beautiful way. There's stock footage of wild landscapes or, you know, streets full of people in towns you maybe can't afford to travel to or get COVID permission to go to anyway. So I think that if you are looking to enhance your work, Storyblocks is a great way to add bang for your buck, as they say.
Ooh, well, if that got you all riled up and ready to subscribe, explore their library and subscribe today at storyblocks.com/maxfilm. That's storyblocks.com/MAXFILM.
Hey, excuse me, everybody. I just wanted to say a few words about the beautiful couple. I've known you two for a long time, and you get along like peanut butter and chocolate. Or, you know, like comedy and culture, like Maximum Fun Podcast. Actually, they're having a block party from October 11th to October 22nd, and that's kind of like your party, right? You have a community of friends and family, and Max Fun has a community of shows and audiences that support them. You're having a new start with your life together, and Max Fun will be putting out new episodes that are especially welcoming to new audiences. So it's a great time to introduce your friends to your favorite show or jump into one you haven't tried before.
Is he still talking about podcasts?
And they're setting up a volunteer event where we can help out our local communities. Plus, Maximum Fun is going to have games, prizes, episode recs, so much other fun stuff.
What's wrong with Kyle? Is he okay?
Oh! anyways, sorry for getting carried away there. If it's all right with everybody here, let's all raise our glasses for a toast to the Max Fun Block Party, which you can learn more about at MaximumFun.org/blockparty, and don't forget to join in on October 11th.
Actually, that sounds pretty cool.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Whiteway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Sam Weinman.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today, we're talking about Butcher, Baker, Nightmare Maker. Drea, would you mind providing us with a brief synopsis?
All right. Butcher, Baker, Nightmare Maker follows teenage Billy. He's 16. He's really tall. And he looks exactly like Christy McNichol because he's played by her brother. Billy is being raised by his aunt Cheryl when both of his parents were killed in a mysterious log-related car accident. And, you know, he's just a normal teenage guy. He loves playing basketball. He loves drinking milk right out of the carton. And he's got an adorable girlfriend, played by Julia Duffy. His aunt pays him a lot of attention, and that comes to a head when she feigns being attacked by the repairman and then stabs him to death in front of Billy, sort of. And then Billy gets implicated in the resulting investigation because the cop is a garbage person. He is the Nightmare Maker in the title, if you ask me. And yes, so it is a roiling, exciting tale of weird incestuous energy, homophobia, and, you know, just teen hijinks.
Yeah.
How's that work?
That was good, but my briefer synopsis was white family figures out how black people deal with the police. let's go with this first question done by, as you heard, Drea stepped in, did the script this week, and I'm gonna kick it off with one of her banger questions. How do you think this film handled the gay characters and storylines?
Boy, howdy. For 1981, this is shockingly progressive. Like, you know, there's an amazing montage in the documentary, The Celluloid Closet. And like movies that came after this, like that were mainstream successes like Teen Wolf and Heaven Help Us, the heroes threw around the F slur with, you know, impunity. And it was just like no big deal. So for in 1981, a movie to paint as the villain or one of the villains, this insanely homophobic cop who keeps dropping the F-bombs and becomes fixated on completely ignoring how utterly homicidal Susan Terrell is because he has this pet theory that there's a gay love triangle going on. You know, it's bizarre and fascinating. And it has a lot to do with, I think, the fact that it was directed by William Asher, but we'll get into him later because that's another whole fascinating venue here. I'm curious to hear Sam's take.
You know, something I love about this film is that at the beginning, we don't know right away that Detective Carlson is a schmuck. Like, he's presented. We don't know that the film knows it. Like, we know it. But the film might not. Because during this time, like, we see a lot of that type, right? Like, the detective or the cop in My Bloody Valentine or, like, The Fog. We're used to them being, like, misogynists and just say this shit for laughs. So he says some things that are homophobic, and he says them for laughs. I saw it with an audience once, and at first, I could hear the straight audience members laughing at those things. And as the movie continues and he becomes it becomes more and more obvious that Carlson is a bad guy. Suddenly, all of those people are complicit in his homophobia. it was so satisfying. And it, and as a queer audience member who hears people laugh at homophobia on the regular, you know, especially through the aughts, it's like, this film is so ahead of its time. And it comes out, like, when it comes to queer horror, I feel like everybody always wants to talk about Nightmare on Elm Street 2. That movie has a gym coach who is a predator and is a closeted gay guy. And it's not great. That's not the representation I want. I want the coach in this movie who is a positive role model, takes care of Billy, and is the dude he's going to call when shit goes down.
I totally agree with you, Sam. I think that it's such a unique angle in, and you don't even understand at first the sympathy that's being laid out, like the reverse angle sympathy, because you're watching this hideousness through the cop. But also the characters themselves, we only very briefly see the partner before he's killed, and we see him like harangued and sexually harassed by this main woman. And so you're like, okay, well, he was alive in my eyes for 2 seconds. Hard to make a call on him. But the coach, who's his partner, he's maybe, along with like the girlfriend of Billy, like just the most stand-up person in the whole movie. Like, oh, he's good at his job. He's pleasant. And he's also, I'm like, oh, what you're telling me is they're in this like loving, supportive relationship.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, that idea of the sympathy that's garnered through someone else's horribleness, because you first have this cop coming up to the coach, and that's when it's revealed that he was partners with the murdered man. And he's like, oh, I guess you're okay. Somebody lost someone they love, and it's just at work. And I'm like, I don't know why you think that makes this guy look bad.
Yeah.
That's breaking my heart for
him.
Yeah.
And the cop is played by Bo Svenson, who was in the Walking Tall sequels. So like people were used to seeing him as being like the sort of heroic cop who breaks the rules and, you know, like bashes a bunch of, you know, hillbilly bootlegger heads in movies. So to have to turn that around and make him the dick here, and to make him to make his homophobia, like, you know, not something we're supposed to find charming and heroic, like Sam was saying.
Yeah,
that's a bold stance.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And I was going to do this to do like a light plug. I'm going to try and keep this slight tangent story to a half. But like, you know, I work on a game, Apex Legend, huge, like very diverse queer team. And we have this character who came out called Seer, and he's pansexual. He's based off of Prince. I sent it to Drea, and he's like, he's not based off of Prince. I didn't legal.
Does he look like the Wax Museum Prince?
Yeah, no, he doesn't. But he definitely has like, he's just this like very like cool, like, you know, dancey character. And there was so much discussion that went into him because, you know, like everyone's like, because when I was there, they were like, you know, we're worried because, you know, this is the first black man and, you know, he's not cishet and all that. I was like, so? I was like, I could play a game and find a cishet black guy. I was like, I want the pansexual Nigerian kid who boots up this game to feel represented. Let's, you know, go. He was already decided by then. I don't want to make it sound like I had any say. They just were kind of airing like some, but one of the things was like when he first was announced, you know, we didn't announce he was pan yet. And I was saying, you know, this is my first kind of character I kind of had some hands on. So, you know, I definitely wanted, and people were asking me like questions. And I asked my boss and she was like, no, I don't want to reveal that he's pan yet because I want all the bigots to fall in love with him first and then let them know that their favorite character is pan. And I say that whole story to say, I feel like that's the exact same energy this movie had, because everything, if you think about the time when this came out, I came into this movie really ready. I totally forgot we were doing queer horror month. So I totally came into this movie ready to be like, what the fuck is this shit? Wow. This guy, because, you know, yes, this guy looks like your typical heroic cop who's gonna save the day, and he's like both misogynistic and homophobic because he comes in, he goes, oh, I don't believe her.
Literally, like, he literally sets up the very first thing he says is, and again, we know she's guilty, so kind of tricky. But his whole thing is, I don't believe this screaming, crying woman covered in blood was attacked.
Yeah.
She's lying.
There's also, like, I think a real, you know, sort of feminist subtext here of, like, this is, you know, when people are like, oh, why don't, if she was raped, why didn't she go to the police? Because even women were genuinely raped and not faking it, like this woman, face this kind of shit from cops like this when they do report it. So,
but even that is a fun trick, because since we, the audience, know he's right, we don't clock that he's being misogynistic.
He's being a monster.
But if you think about it, it's like he doesn't have the information we have. So there's no reason for him to come in with that. And then he comes in and he's doing this. And I just really was like, what's this? And then I totally, eventually the movie starts to shift and you see like, oh, this guy is not a hero. He's a bad guy. And then it's kind of like,
And then later he holds a gun on a Mexican guy for no apparent reason. Like he's just a barrel of laughs, this cat.
Yeah.
I think the other thing too is, you get an equally, this is a film that has multiple villains in it.
Because
our Aunt Cheryl, whom I feel like we could easily just spend 18 hours talking about her.
Oh, yeah.
And
I mean, and just her eyebrows.
Just her eyebrow. Okay. She also, I want to retroactively go back to when we were voting most important wig, because the whole first of it, I was like, why is this wig happening? And then they actually did like a wig reveal. Like they did because you wanted me to see that later. But she also has, again, that kind of reverse angle in, because we've already seen her be like you're suspect of her within 2 seconds because she gives this like look to the camera and you're like,
that kid's crying and you know why.
Like,
but then she's like, super creepy. She's super sexual with him. She's super possessive. She's obviously violent. We saw the whole thing. And then so that's the woman who, when she brings up the gay angle with Billy and starts going off and she's like, oh, homosexuals are terrible. They're sinful people. And you're like, woman, you talk to dead people and you killed someone and you keep molesting your nephew. How? Glass house much? Like what?
Speaking of the performance, just her transformation through the movie.
Yeah.
Because when we're at the start of the movie and she let them thangs come out and I was like, I'm ready to be Uncle Iffy. You know, like I was locked in. And then by the end of the movie, I'm like, oh, this is a gremlin. Like this is, because he was like, what? I was like, what's happening? What's going?
You know she's going to be fully unhinged though, because she's a woman who falls asleep with a candle lit. Like, that's her intro.
Yes.
She wakes up next to a lit candle.
Thank you. She wakes up next to a lit candle at one point. She walks into several rooms that she's, like, just, like, goes into the basement.
That means,
and there's, like, 5 lit candles.
Yeah.
What's going on with this house?
Woman can't stop lighting candles.
How is that house not burned down?
Truly.
Yeah.
Truly.
The spirits.
I love that you brought that. That's, like, one of my favorite things. That she literally, it's like that morning scene. You see her open her eyes, whatever. Lit candle next to her bed. I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. That's the attention to detail I'm looking for.
The fun thing about this movie too is that it has that like 80s horror logic, because there were a lot of bad decisions just made throughout this movie. I think the worst decision has to be, who the fuck drinks a glass of milk before a basketball game? I'm like, you're gonna be farting on all your teammates, your guts, you're jumping up, and you're gonna do a lot of jumping and running after a full glass of milk, bro. You need you come on.
If it does a body good, if he
like, to me, that was the I was like, bro, I would have just been like, oh no, I just wouldn't drink a glass of milk.
No, that sounds disgusting. But thank you.
I'm about to go get sweaty. Yeah, sure. Let me pound a glass of.
it's actually tied into the fact that when you read about this, that there is this like Oedipus reference.
Yes.
Because, not to give away anything on this 1981 movie, but it's revealed for reasons that make it. I'm like, I don't know if they think that. We needed that, so it's now creepy that she keeps hitting on him.
Yeah, because if it's an aunt, you know, whatever.
I'm like, oh, you're only the woman who raised me and my mother's sister. Like, so it's revealed that, in fact, Aunt Cheryl is his birth mother. And so there's this Oedipus element that's been tied into it. But there's also, like, all, like, she keeps, like, the mother stuff. Like, she keeps giving him milk. And she keeps, like, there's just weird things that are so beautiful, like freshman year, if I was gonna write a play, these are the kind of real subtle things I'm gonna weave in to explain my story. And I loved all of those. That milk was so gross, but you know, at least they had the good sense to set the We already saw him being a milk connoisseur early.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
No,
it's not an unexpected milk enjoyment.
If you're going to drug something, you know, you got to go with a beverage of choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, as a fan of Lifetime films, right, which never actually deliver what they're implying. Like, okay, this looks like incest, but they're never going to go there. There's always like one more step. In Butcher Baker, Nightmare Maker, they go there. So they actually say, yes, that's his mom, and she's trying to fuck her son. Like, she is going to kiss him at the very end, right? And, why I think that he is straight. Because the movie is so explicit about everything else, I think that they're interrogating our idea of what masculinity is and how that's linked to the perception of homosexuality, right? Or at least in the context of this world. Because everything that he does when he's interrogated about being queer, it all has to do with how masculine he is or how he appears when it comes to like how often he fucks her. How often he sleeps with his girlfriend, not just that he does it.
Yeah.
So, and I think because they've been so on the nose about everything all the way down to the mom, like they would just give it away if they thought
they're not going to waffle on this one.
It ties to that idea that's still pervasive, not as much as it used to be, but the idea of women raising children without a man in the house.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Exactly. You don't have a strong father figure. Like what's going to happen is you're going to turn out gay. Like it's this feminine influence and not actual just sort of like genetic makeup or whatever. Yeah. And I think that ties into it as well.
I want to take a quick dive into William Asher real quick because he is a fascinating figure. So this guy directed like most of the episodes of I Love Lucy, a lot of the episodes of Bewitched. And at the time he was married to Elizabeth Montgomery, the star of that show. He directed all the Frankie and Annette Beach Party movies.
No.
And he directed this movie. So it's like, I don't know if this is one of those things where like the first guy got sick and the producers knew him and it was a buddy. I don't know why he made this movie, but I do know that when Bewitched was on the air, that was like one of the gayest shows of the 1960s. You got Paul Lynde running around, you know, you've got gay actors. You've got Agnes Moorehead, you've got, you know, a Dick Sargent, who is a gay actor playing the second Darren. And like, you know, and Elizabeth McGovern, why do I keep getting her? I keep getting confusing her with the Downton Abbey mom. Sorry. Elizabeth Montgomery was vocally pro-queer in an era when not many people were. Like she was a pioneer in like famous women becoming Pride Parade Grand Marshals, you know? And so like, obviously, you know, the two of them were clearly like progressive and open-minded about queer stuff. And I think that's something that he brings to this film. Although it's, you can't really look at this as sort of an auteurist piece because it's a complete outlier to everything else he did for his entire career.
That's fascinating. I had no idea that was his pedigree.
Yeah.
Because although this movie has a handle on it. And I know we're going to vote. Now I can say that in my wrap up. But like, as much as it's funny because I think Jimmy McNichol has the weakest performance in the bunch. But as much as there's like, sure, there's bumps and sure, there's things that are ridiculous and it's not a flowy. It has a strong directorial voice. Like it has someone behind it that is like directing the level of pitch of crazy that she's going at. Mm-hmm. It's handling like how these threads of how the homosexual criticism or not or support is coming across. So
well, you know, on that, since you brought it up, let's give our final reviews.
I love
Dre,
voting.
Why don't you start? Get the vote, rock the vote.
All right, this is a stream it for me, if only because it took me a minute to get into like the pacing of it or the world of it. And Jimmy McNichols, I honestly was like, oh, bless. I don't know how they found this boy who looks like Christy McNichol, who's clearly never acted before in his life. But he had been like a vast child star who clearly never took any notes. So he has some like real woodenness, but there's something really unique and delicious once you get into it. And Susan Terrell is like, woo, letting it go. And so I would stream it just for that.
It's a screen it for me. I you know, this is a movie that I had never heard of for a long time, and in the last couple of years it's been sort of bubbling up. It was on TCM, they put out a Code Red, did a new Blu-ray, and I was starting to hear about it. It's like, oh, this is a really important queer horror film, and I, this is my first time watching it. I'm like, oh my God, there's so much to unpack here. Like, I will be watching this movie again at some point, because there's just a lot, you know, there's so many ideas here, and these, just that delectable Susan Terrell performance. And, you know, as a fan of Julia Duffy from everything from, you know, Newhart and Designing Women to now she's in Hallmark movies, you know, it was cool to see her. Although, you know, when they made this movie, she was 30 and Jimmy McNichol was 20 and they're both playing high schoolers. So, you know, but kudos, she pulls it off. Yeah, this is a fascinating piece of work, and I want another Shudder documentary about how this thing even got made.
Oh my God, me too.
Y'all got me hyped. Me too. What about you, Sam?
This is absolutely a yes for me. I mean, I already, just say I had never seen it and I just saw that the title was named after the gayest nursery rhyme. Like, you put three men in a tub and then you want to find out who they be? Like, this is like actually thematically the movie, right? Because it's like, oh, these guys seem pretty gay. And I mean,
and they're all tradesmen.
I don't even think it's an accident. Like, yes, it's a fun title, but I think it also is thematically what this is about. And it's that witch hunt idea. But it's a yes for me all the way through. Even if it was a crap movie, I love the bonkers performances, the Final Destination 2 kill at the beginning that definitely inspired and maybe did it better than the log truck in that film. The kills are wild, and Susan Terrell just is worth it for that. I love when she cuts her hair and she's like, it looks good, right? Because it kind of does. It's a journey.
Yeah.
It looks intentional. I'll say that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And yeah, no, I'm definitely a screen it too. Fun fact, I passed this movie on, you know, back in the day when you would just click through channels, and that log scene was the only part of this movie I saw. And so as a kid, I just would hate when my dad would drive behind those like logging trucks because I saw that. So, definitely screen it. Also, just has that classic like 80s horror movie vibe to me that just would feel fun to like kind of see in a theater with people, especially like a Los Feliz 3 type that has that classic cinema feel, nice fabric-y seats. So yeah, definitely a screen it. Knocked it out the park. Super fun. We got more show for you, but we'll get right back to that after this short break.
Give your feline friend protein-packed meals they'll crave with Smalls.
Iffy, I know you got a cat now. She's real cute and tiny. Mine are not. They're huge, enormous, chubby beasts. And they're so cute. And they effing love Smalls. It's high quality, genuine, like actual human grade food. And you can tell it smells better just when you're pouring it out. And it definitely smells better coming out the other side, you know what I'm saying. 100%. Yeah.
I mean, you might still hear it in the background, but, you know, Puar definitely decided to take a fat one right in the middle of the pod. And, you know, I feel like, you know, normally I'd be running for the hills, but it wasn't too bad. And that's, and I remember smelling it and being like, I'm going to talk about this during the small time.
This is horrifying, but also the truth. And those are things that you say a lot as a cat owner. But yes, I've definitely, my cats enjoy it. They're softer and shinier.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, smell good. So it's nice. It's nice definitely. Stuff.
Take a short quiz on smalls.com/maxfilm to customize your sampler and use code MAXFILM for a total of 30% off your first order. That's smalls, smalls.com/maxfilm, code MAXFILM.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Sam Weinman,
Drea Clark.
And today is both the start of our month-long look at queer horror and the episode where our wonderful Elf Prince producer, Casey O'Brien, is on vacation. Therefore, Drea Clark got to come up with this segment, and she has decided to craft a horror film-inspired game of Would You Rather for the rest of us to play. Drea, take it away.
All right, so you guys know I'm longtime camp counselor here, been on many a camping trip.
Me too.
Yeah. Oh, so I knew we were kindred. I could feel it. And, you know, one of the best ways to while away the time is a nice round of Would You Rather. You give people two impossible things to choose between, and hopefully they should both be terrible. So I've put together some questions. I'm excited because I know you guys will embrace these, take them seriously, really puzzle out. So I'm going to start very, very simply. This is the easiest, simplest one. Would you rather be chased by Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Michael Myers from Halloween?
That's a easy, tricky easy one, just because Leatherface seems like he runs faster, but Michael Myers, even when you think you outrun him, suddenly he's just there.
Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, that's what I was going to say, and that's what inspired my pick, is I feel like Michael Myers has some supernatural qualities where Leatherface, I could give him the hands. You know, if I dodge, he missed that with that chainsaw, he getting the hands. He's getting a two-piece special, right? Pow, pow, pow. You know, I ain't Margie. Margie, when she tried to give the hands, I was like, Margie, you ain't got the hands like that. Call the cops. She tried. She got slashed up. Wouldn't be me.
I think Michael Myers is really straight, and Leatherface is kind of gay. And so to me, I would pick Leatherface because maybe we could kick it. Like, if you've seen The New Generation, like, he's putting on makeup. I mean, he is true. Queer. And it just gets more and more as the movies go. So yeah, there's a chance I might make it out of that situation. Plus, and Michael Myers is just dull.
Sure. You're saying Leatherface is giving you the classic, he's not bad, he's just misunderstood.
No, I think he's bad, but he's also queer, and I'm down for a queer bad boy.
Ooh, okay. Leatherface, queer bad boy of horror.
Yeah, I think I would have a better chance of Leatherface. I think the tricky part would be if Iffy and I were both in this situation, because Iffy is going to be all like muscular and striated, and I'm the one who's marbled. So if we're looking at a cannibalism situation, clearly I'm the guest.
You do look delicious, Alonzo. I've always said that about you. All right. Would you rather be a small child walking along near a gutter when a clown appears in it and starts talking to you, or be a woman with paranormal investigative skills in a dark room looking at a painting when the nun comes out of the painting towards you? I mean, just off the top of my head.
I'm going to pick the nun.
I mean, this is the easiest pick for me. Definitely the child. You know, this joke has been made a million and one times, but you would not have gotten a black kid to even talk to a clown. I'd be like, my dad said, don't talk to strangers. You look weird and you're in the gutter. I'm going home. That's it. And then 30 minutes later, a black dude and a white dude was like, were you in the gutter talking to my son? You in the gutter talking to my son? Do I need to come down there and beat your ass? Like, that's my version of it.
If he really wants to beat up a horror villain.
Oh, yeah. No, don't worry. Before the month ends, I will have a power ranking of which horror villain's asses I think I could kick and I couldn't. Good.
I have to break the tie here. I probably the nun, just because I think as a lapsed Catholic, I might be able to sort of, you know, find some common ground with her.
I mean, what is she going to do? Come off the wall and convert me? I'd pick her any day.
Oh, you're going to pick the nun. I will say, I wish that the audience could see the face Sam made when I even said, do you want to be the child? When he was like, I'm out. Bye.
Nope.
Threw off the headset. I'm walking. All right. Would you rather be the mother of a vomiting, possessed child with a rotating head, or be driving your young sister as she struggles to breathe, and then she sticks her head out the window into a telephone pole?
If the choice is, do you want to be Ellen Burstyn or not Ellen Burstyn, I'm always going to say Ellen Burstyn. I'm only human.
I'd rather be driving my sister because I don't want to be a parent. It's so much work. Oh my God. Leave that for somebody else.
The scariest part of Hereditary for me was that drive home, because I am an older brother and I can't imagine having to explain to my parents that I'd knocked my sister's head off. I'd knocked my sister's. Like, that gave me so much anxiety. Be like, Daddy, I went to the party and she had an allergic attack. And I told her to put her head out the window. And when her head was out the window, when she in a bowl and her head isn't there. Like when he went home and he just went to bed, I was like, bro, I get it. I get it, bro. Just fucking sleep and let them figure the shit out. So I'm gonna be the mom.
Look, if you thought the Susan Terrell's candle was a problem, like what's happening in that treehouse? Why is it glowing orange all the time? That thing's just gonna go up and smoke at any moment.
So oh my true. Gosh.
Okay, so this next one is a really sort of fine difference because there's a lot of similarities. So I want you to like thinking cap on. You're in this scenario. What would you do? Would you rather have an entity follow you trying to kill you unless you have sex and therefore curse someone else to death, or have an entity trying to kill you unless you copy a videotape and pass it along to curse someone else to death? In both of these, you're being followed. You will be killed unless you pass it around, but it's a different situation. You're either going to have sex with someone to pass it off, or, and then you know them, or you have to make a copy of a tape knowing that whoever watches it.
Look, early 90s me, these were both very much in my wheelhouse.
Alonzo, what was I doing in the 90s? Making copies of videos and having sex
with randos. Yeah. With randos. So like that, either that that's a six of one, half dozen the other for me.
Oh, good. You're like, would I rather? It's not whichever is first.
Yeah. Is it Thursday? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, good. I like that insight.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like in 2021, one of these are going to be way harder, and it's definitely not the fucking one. Because you're going to have to find a first of all, you're going to have to find a VCR machine. Like you're going to be sitting there on eBay sweating bullets trying to.
Then you
got to
find
through
a second one if you want to make copies.
Exactly, you're losing your mind. You're going to a college AV club. Like, please, I need to get in that basement, bro. I need to. Versus like me being like, okay, I'm gonna just go and find someone with racist parents and go to town. Like, yeah, this is y'all problem now. Figure it out.
Here's the thing about It Follows. It's like straight people problems, the movie. So because if this happened to gay people, it would be a short film. First off, we would all get together and be like, hey, all we got to do is have sex and keep it going. And everybody would be like, well, we're already doing that. Right.
Yeah. The soundtrack would be yakety sex.
Yeah. And so we would immediately solve it. I pick sex.
Yeah.
Okay. Sam, I hope that the pull quote from this whole episode is just, I pick sex. Sam Wyman.
I mean, that checks out. Yeah.
This has been a delight. I want you guys to know you all chose correctly.
Oh, good.
Even though everyone chose different things sometimes, it was all right. And so A+ is all around. I'm very happy.
I look forward to the Valentine's Day edition.
Oh, I will absolutely do a Valentine's Day one. Challenge accepted.
All right. Well, now it's time for stacks. Now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. So, Alonzo, why don't you start?
So this is a movie that is, as this episode drops, currently in theaters, but it's going to be on Netflix this coming Wednesday, the 13th. And it is a Chilean-Spanish co-production called Fever Dream, directed by Claudia Llosa. And it is a horror film, but not in the way that you're thinking of one. It's more a movie about kind of dread overall. And it's a movie that deals with the kind of dread that sets in from a variety of subjects, whether it's parents who are constantly questioning whether they're parenting right and whether, you know, their children are going to turn into people they don't even recognize. It's kind of an eco thriller at the same time. But it's basically about a woman and her young daughter who travel to her family's country house in Chile. She becomes friends with the neighbor. The neighbor's son is a little strange and we find out why, and other things happen. And I don't really want to give away anything, because the slow unfolding of the surprises is a real treat for this film. But it's very moody and atmospheric. The performances are great. You know, it's shot by the guy who did The Orphanage and The Impossible, as well as I think the last Jurassic Park movie. Anyway, it's one of those foreign language films on Netflix that you're gonna have to dig to find. They're not gonna do a ton of promotion on it, but it's worth looking for and absolutely worth watching. So check it out, Fever Dream.
All right, what about you, Sam? What you thinking?
I'm gonna recommend Siege, aka Self-Defense from 1983. If you were watching Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker and you're like, man, are there any other good examples of queer representation in the early 1980s, that because it's not all Cruising and Dressed to Kill, I would recommend Siege. It is basically The Purge, except it's a gay guy. So it's a day in Canada. It's based on a true story, a day when the police in a small town in Canada protested. And so crime just was everywhere. It was like a free for all. And and so they took that concept, threw it in a gay bar at a time when, you know, it's complicated in 83. Right. So and then they trigger warning, execute people one by one in the scene, but one guy escapes. So it's like a grindhouse movie about this group of straight people at an apartment who this guy flees and they have to protect him or not. But yeah, so it's The Purge, but gay. It was released over the summer by Severn Films, so you can grab it on Blu-ray, but I don't think it's streaming anywhere.
Listen, Alonso loves it when we promote physical media.
Physical media, baby. Like,
we're fans of that here. So that's still a good choice.
And don't watch it on YouTube, because there is a version on YouTube, but it's missing scenes and it's so dark at the end that you don't know what happens and you don't get to see everything. So actually find the physical media.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, that's Alonzo's favorite words.
That's,
truly. Get that Blu-ray.
What you got for us?
All right. So I have a documentary that I saw at Toronto Film Fest this year that's coming out today, October 8th. Called The Rescue. It is by the filmmaking team of Jimmy Chin and Elizabeth Chai Vasserhelyi. And many people might know Free Solo, the last film they did, which won the Oscar for Best Documentary. But The Rescue is about, just a couple of years ago in Thailand, those like 12 little boys on their soccer team who got trapped in this flooded cave. And the thing that's really unique about it is so many different people have bought rights to different parts of this story. So some people have the rights of the kids and they're doing like an episodic, and then some have the rights of the Thai people, whatever. The Rescue is around the British divers who are weird cave divers. And these guys are so eccentric and they're like, yeah, nobody does what we do for fun because it's terrible. But they led it. And so it's beautifully shot and they really lay out well. So you get such an idea of the enormity of this process that the whole country was on hand to like get these kids out. It was just this big endeavor, and the different teams working together and that were not centered around American heroes is a bonus in my book. But it's just riveting stuff. It's in theaters only now. Nat Geo's releasing it though, so it'll eventually end up there and probably many other places because their work is immensely accessible. It is, again, it's called The Rescue.
Okay. Well, to close it off, I'm going to definitely, my staff pick is going to be a BCBB. And we all know what that means. A British Clive Barker banger, Hellraiser, you're going to come through. And instead of going over a movie that most people kind of have seen and know about, I'm just going to read the four submissions on the Google People Ask section of Hellraiser, which is, first one, is Pinhead a good guy? What's the point of Hellraiser? Why does Hellraiser have pins in his head? How did Hellraiser end? Too scary for me. I'm not going to watch the movie. How did Hellraiser end?
Somebody never change, internet. That's marketing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love it. Oh, yeah, please. All right. We got to get out of here. So thank you, Sam, for being on the show. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you get out of here? I'm going to do on the Bravo hand.
Yeah. If you liked listen to me with Jordan Crescioa on Aughts Tyrion, where we unpack Aughts era horror films. And keep an eye out for my doc. I don't know when that's coming out, but someday.
And that sounds like working on anything in this industry. I did a thing. Don't know when you'll get to see it.
It happened. And it will have a title.
Oh, my gosh. Well, if you, listener, have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer today is Christian Duenas. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. And, you know, we had the wonderful Dre Clark on the script. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.